Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Hour number two. The Ingalls Advantage Chalk Line is 1-800-347-1063. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307. All during that first hour is having these thoughts. I've got thoughts. Got questions. And I only go one place for that. Yes. Yes, indeed. El Presidente.
Good morning, sir. I would have to say, though, that your judgment is questionable if you're coming to me, though.
Well, questions. I don't know, because I don't pay as much, you know, I pay just enough attention to Knox White to sit back and go, man, I don't like that guy. Anyway.
What's not to like? Is the stealth mayor. I mean, you never really, you know, you never really hear or see from him. You know?
Well, he's really in his element right now, though.
Well, yeah. You do have to say this about Mayor Knox White. There have been no scandals that you can attribute to the Knox White administration as far as the city of Greenville mayor's office is concerned. Now, may have political differences with him here and there, but that has been pretty much a scandal-free office.
Mm. Anyway, how do we know how we're counting COVID deaths in Greenville County?
Oh, of course not. No, Tara has been going off on this whole situation for quite some time. Is there a way that officials are counting? Yes. Exactly how accurate is that? And are these deaths that could be attributable or whatever to other causes?
Right.
That's the questionable issue there. And you know, it's like saying if you have two separate diseases at the same time and you die, which one did you die of? Now, that's something that an autopsy obviously ought to be determined for, but that's not always the case.
You remember when John Glenn's widow died?
Yes.
106 years old.
Yeah.
Full life.
Yeah.
I hope I live that long.
Yeah.
They called it a COVID death.
Right.
But George Floyd was a COVID death.
He did apparently test positive for that. Yes.
Yes. Listen. John Lott did a audit on what he was looking at as far as how they're counting cases,
right,
of COVID-19. And if you test positive, right, the next time you go, if you test again and you test positive again, that's considered two cases. Did you know that?
That has been posited before. Yes.
Well, no, that's not posited. That's the way they're doing it.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you're somebody that is trying to go back to work and you're like, well, I don't feel bad, I still don't have it, and you go test a third time, a fourth time, you've contributed to four cases of COVID-19. John Lott believes that before he went, you know, he's now working for the Trump administration. You know who I'm talking about, right? Dr. John Lott?
Yes.
So now he's working for the Trump administration. But before he took off, he estimated that 40% of the cases that are confirmed positive for COVID-19 are not actually correct. He thinks it's been overinflated by 40%. And he thinks the deaths have been inflated by 40%. Except we know better than that, because the CDC is actually the ones that got out there and said, well, you know, the actual number for everybody that died, which they haven't done that again. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and they probably won't.
And I don't remember, was it September that they put this out?
Yeah,
where they
something
said,
like that, yeah.
Yeah, only 9,700, and 9,700 people is a lot of people, but when you're out there comparing that to, what, 303,000 now? I'm telling you, this has all been that's my biggest question, is how are we counting it here? Because I don't understand, what's the end game for all of this? How do you wreck an economy in order to save us?
Yeah.
How do you wreck the world we live in order to save us? And why haven't we ever done that before? Why aren't we just, consigned to, you know, a footpath, because, you know, driving cars kills a lot of people too. And I mean, well, maybe we shouldn't be, you know, swimming.
Maybe we shouldn't sell alcohol. Maybe we should not allow the sale of tobacco. There's plenty of things that can be attributed to a shortened lifespan.
But those things are allowed to stay open during the lockdowns. Yeah. Those things are allowed to stay open. And just for those of you out there that are prepper types, just so you know, one of the things you can barter, and you'll get a lot of things for them, go buy a bunch of cigarettes and booze and just lock it up. That's your barter item. There you go.
Saw something interesting where the Atlanta City Schools, of course, they are not wanting kids to go to school, but they allowed a film crew to come in and to film a new Spider-Man movie. So, glad they've got their priorities straight.
Yeah.
The population that is least likely to contract nor to suffer any symptoms or ill effects. Can't meet, but by golly, we can go film a new Spider-Man movie.
Well, I mean,
using Atlanta school property to do so.
Well, I just don't know. Whenever I say that, I feel like I'm channeling my inner Ronald Reagan. Well,
yeah. There you go again.
There you go again, Skippy. I wonder what the here locally, because here's my problem with politicians in South Carolina. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but have you ever noticed that we never lead. We're never the first. Have you ever noticed that?
Well, there are a few things that we have led in. Some of them didn't end so well, but.
Well, I mean, you know, when everybody was locking down, all of a sudden we had Henry McMaster with his ridiculous haircut getting up there saying, "We're going to do everything that everybody else is doing because I don't know what else to do," which is basically what he did. That's basically what he did.
Well, he did not lock things down to the extent nor for the duration that many other states did, including some neighboring states like, oh, I don't know, North Carolina and Georgia. Yeah.
Now, this latest time, he got out there and said, "We're not going to lock down," which I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned by this. I was wondering, okay, what happened to Henry? Who got to him? Good on you, Henry. Because this is, while everybody's out there, all of these, the suicide rate, and the domestic violence, and the drug abuse, and all the other things that are going up, when we count those, when all that is said and done, it's going to be horrific. And what about the jobs that are being lost? What about the money that's being lost?
Now, that's one thing that I am very wary about 2021, because of the debt this nation is accumulating at a staggering rate now. And granted, I was not opposed to there being some government handouts to those who are displaced, because government caused this crisis. Government caused this economic crisis. Yes, it may have been in response to a medical situation, but government lockdowns, state governments shutting down businesses, telling industries that they cannot operate, limiting the amount of customers, limiting the travel, limiting religious services, all of the restrictions that state governments have imposed, because it's not the federal government. This was not Donald Trump. This was not the federal government. The federal government only can make recommendations, CDC guidelines and things. These states are who locked down their economies.
Yeah.
And the damage that has been done to jobs and to careers and businesses is going to be staggering. And I don't think we have seen the impact of that yet. I think that is being not covered up, but some of the things that we have done economically and the subsidies and the payments that we've done over the past year or so, may have mitigated some of that, but I just think 2021 is going to be a real rough ride economically.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever looked at the way Obama came into office? We had an economic issue going on.
Yeah.
It was gigantic. With this one, what they did was they actually played into people's dreams of home ownership.
Yeah.
Here we are 8 years, 12 years later, and to get back to a Democrat in charge. Now we've had to play to people's fears.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any correlation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I hate when I get out there and I start doing that kind of thinking where I get up there and say, oh, because I'm a big Occam's razor kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't think government is competent enough. But at the same time, when I look at some of the things that are happening right now in the background over some of these servers and everything they're seizing, I remember some things back from my time. Anyway, thank you, El Presidente.
Certainly.
Viva El Presidente!
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
I've got a few quotes for you this moment, and I'm going to show you how they play today, okay? Like my first quote from Nikita Khrushchev, the former premier of the USSR, "The press is our ideological weapon, our chief ideological weapon. The press disparages Republicans, loves the Democrats. They are all Democrats for the most part. They bury Democrat misdeeds. They make up Republican misdeeds out of whole cloth. They're burying the Republican legal challenges regarding the 2020 election. And they're all with the president-elect, which the most exciting thing he's done so far is break his foot playing with his dog. Tech was about to be brought to heel. Big tech, because that's more important than the press right now to me. Because who watches CNN? Who watches MSNBC? I don't. Big tech, on the other hand, they try to control the narrative. They know they're trying to control the narrative. They tried to rule the narrative, and they were getting ready to be brought in line or regulated out of existence. That's going to go away. A Biden presidency will cement a state-controlled media establishment. Then from Benjamin Franklin, "Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation must begin by subduing the freeness of speech." You know, this notion of censorship, not only by the historical press, but within all other communications with the public, did not exist in the time of Khrushchev. Why would Twitter and Facebook subdue reports of Hunter Biden's relationships with Ukraine and China and ties with his pop Joe? And meanwhile, the president was subject to an intense 3-year investigation regarding collusion with Russia to win an election that resulted in no collusion being discovered. What would an aggressive 3-year investigation of Hunter Biden's emails produce? Then there's a silencing of conservative voices across universities, like Janet Mock was banned from speaking at Brown. Ben Shapiro was banned at speaking at Cal State LA. And, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos, they set fires in Berkeley over him. Number 3. By Nicaraguan dictator Anastasio Somoza. "Indeed, you won the elections, but I won the count." Is it possible for a presidential candidate in the United States to legitimately have the votes to win, but then lose the election to the counting of those votes? That's the question we have right now. This is what everybody should want to know. In dispute at present with the 2020 election is the flood of mail-in ballots that may have distorted the 2020 election results through vote counting processes in Democrat-controlled cities. And why are they the last ones to count? How do the ones out west count faster? How did California count faster? How did they count and get it right in Florida the first time? So, yeah, our election system, for me, is forever thrown into question. Sharon Rondeau said the implementation of a multi-party governing system offers people an avenue for giving constructive criticism to the government. This prevents leaders from becoming dictatorial and repressive. For a democracy, which we're always told that Trump was a threat to our democracy, right? That was always a thing. And yet, everything that they're trying to do, everything they're trying to make happen, is trying to push us to one-party domination. The two predominant parties in the United States have mutual legitimacy, well, until Trump and the Republicans won the 2016 election. The Democrats never recognized that. There was no peaceful transition of power. There was no easy transition of power. Barack Obama was the one that trademarked that little ditty. It wasn't. It's not Donald Trump. George Orwell said, "Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past." The founding of our country, the past, is under direct assault from the woke initiative. Wokeness, which is a Marxist concept, is trying to tell us that our nation's founding is based on slavery, which is a false narrative. And why false? Slavery was an accepted legal process at the time of our country's founding, and many of our founders had slaves along with others across the world, including, and not exclusively, you know, Europe and Africa. But slavery contradicts the founding principles these great men advanced. The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution held the principles of freedom and equality that contributed to the abolition of slavery, not slavery's justification. So should Biden gain the presidency, being Orwell's the present, this woke notion and the 1619 Project could be expanded to redefine the past and orient the future education narrative. Gore Vidal, he got out there and said, "As for civil liberties, anyone who's not vigilant may one day find himself living, if not in a police state, at least in a police city." And we've been seeing this effort to delegitimize our police departments across the country, which is, you know, based upon a false narrative. And among the 800,000 armed policemen in this country, there have been incidents of criminal behavior that need to be addressed. But if you look at Michael Brown's shooting as a criminal act, that's another false narrative. But that incident was leveraged by Black Lives Matter to accelerate the movement's Marxist agenda to take down and defund the police. And then we have Marxist Antifa's involvement. With Biden, what's going to happen then? Could defunded police be refunded and reestablished and transitioned from an entity to protect the people to an entity that protects the state? And then there's the last one, the scariest one, from Norman Thomas. "The American people will never knowingly adopt socialism, but under the name of liberalism, they will adopt every fragment of the socialist program until one day America will be a socialist nation without knowing how it happened." Is that what's happening right now? We've lived through decades of gradual transition of socialist sentiments and actions in our country, becoming more socialist each day through the transition. We've got universities and K-12 school systems, the media, large companies, philanthropic organizations, other entities transition from idealistic to socialist, unnoticed. Would Biden's administration be a massive socialist revolution in a totalitarian state? Probably not, but given what has happened already, it could be the straw that breaks democracy's back. Be aware. It's past Friday. Iran announced that Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the leader of Iran's military nuclear program, had died amidst the thunder of explosives and a hail of bullets. Iran blamed Israel. Israel refused to comment. American leftists mourned his passing, and a leftist Jew made the foolish decision to tweet out a thought experiment. What if Iran had assassinated an Israeli nuclear scientist? That didn't go very well. Iran holds a special place in the leftist heart. Barack Obama devoutly believed that his charming smile, in conjunction with a bunch of pallets of cash and a blind eye to Iran's nuclear ambitions, would placate the jihadist and the apocalyptic dream of Iran's mullahs and create peace in the Middle East, which Trump is actually in the middle of doing right now, without any of that stuff. And if the plan ended up killing a few hundred or a few hundred thousand or million Israelis along the way, that was a small price to pay for a second Obama Nobel Peace Prize. I mean, peace in the Middle East. Sorry. Israel wasn't too hot with that plan. They didn't think too much of that one. Maybe that's because Iran, since 1979, has been loud and clear, loud and proud in its calls for Israel to be immolated in an Iran-created nuclear holocaust. So Israel has learned from past history that if a nation says it intends to exterminate you, you take their threat seriously. And then there's the little matter of Hamas, which is dedicated to killing Israelis and which is an Iranian-funded organization. So this past Friday, the Iranians announced that Israelis had assassinated Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Not entirely unreasonable to blame them. After all, not only was Fakhrizadeh a brigadier general in Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, a designated terrorist organization, he was also a physicist who headed the Iranian military nuclear program. And Israel is believed to be behind the assassinations of several of Iran's nuclear scientists. Obama's former team members were devastated, especially John Brennan, the former communist whom many believe is a secret Muslim. On Twitter, he got out and said, "This was a criminal act and highly reckless. It risks lethal retaliation and a new round of regional conflict. Iranian leaders would be wise to wait for the return of responsible American leadership on the global stage and to resist the urge to respond against perceived culprits." Then we get this. "I do not know whether a foreign government authorized to carry out the murder of Fakhrizadeh. Such an act of state-sponsored terrorism would be a flagrant violation of international law and encourage more governments to carry out lethal attacks against foreign officials." Another person offended by the death of a general in a terrorist organization was Alex Kane, a Jewish leftist who hangs around with the anti-Semites at Mondau Weiss. Mr. Kane thought he had a really clever idea. He tweeted, "Imagine what would happen if Iran assassinated an Israeli nuclear scientist." I don't understand some of these people on social media. I really don't. He quickly learned that there was no moral parity between Iran and Israel. So in response to that, on Twitter, he heard about, they've already blown up the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires back in 1992, killing 4 diplomats, 25 civilians, and wounding 242. 2 years later, they blew up the AMIA, Jewish Community Building, killing 85, wounding hundreds. Imagine what would... Oh, never mind. Another response was probably pretty similar to when this happened, and this is referencing the bus bomb in Bulgaria that killed 6. And then there's, "Imagine if Israel's highest leadership outright repeatedly vowed to wipe Iran off the map. Imagine what would happen if Iran attached a sticky bomb to the car of an Israeli diplomat's wife while she went to pick up her kids. Wait a minute." That's what Iran did. "Imagine if Israelis were chanting death to Iran for 40 years on every Friday night for their Passover." So it's not much of a stretch to sit out there and look at this stuff. When Iran takes a hit, it's always interesting to see the leftists all start crawling out from the same rocks. It's also interesting with so many Jewish people that think left, how the American political left regards Israel, to me. I don't understand it. I really don't understand it, because it's conflicting. It's a conflicting thing for me to sit here and try to take that in and try to figure out what is what and who's what's motivating whom. And because, but here's one thing. Now, stop me if you've heard this before. When right now, with all this talk of unification coming out of the Democratic Party, because Joe Biden is the president-elect, to me, that sounds, especially with some of the things I'm hearing, if we don't unify, like coming out of Pittsburgh where Antifa's out there saying, "We're armed and we'll go into conservative neighborhoods," which I'd love to know how you're going to figure out where those are. "We'll go into conservative neighborhoods and we'll make things hard. And if somebody, we'll do this, we'll do that." That sounds more like you want us to submit. Which is interesting, because that's the basis behind Islamism, submission. I find that, comparing those two things coming from the American left and the Islamics, I find that interesting. And then things began to sort of make sense for me. Ingalls Advantage Talk Line is 1-800-347-1063. Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Louie in Greer. Yes, sir. And I'm sorry for the wait.
Good morning, Bill. How are you this morning?
I'm just trying to cope. Just trying to cope.
Bill, I've got a question for you.
Certainly.
September of 2018, President Trump signed an executive order. And, you know, if there's any outside interference in any election.
Yes, sir.
Would that mean, could he remain president until, since there was outside interference and since Dominion headquarters was in Canada?
You know, I talked about that earlier in the show, and I don't know the details to him remaining in power, especially in the middle, because there's a transition going on right now. But, you know, logic would dictate that if this was actually a true emergency, that yes, he would remain in power simply because everything else would have to spin up, because the president, the incoming president, whoever it is, like him or hate him, he doesn't even have a cabinet seated when he takes over, and it would make, the logic would dictate that. I don't know the actual details to it. But it does indicate to me that they saw the tea leaves and knew there was going to be some cheating going on. And some of the thoughts that are going on is that instead of arresting people, because they looked at other midterm elections where they saw cheating occurring, and they went in there and took a really close look at them. So the thought process is maybe some of these people didn't get arrested and all of this cheating was allowed to happen this time. But, you know, that's taking critical thinking and mixing it with three-dimensional chess, and I don't know what you get when you mix those two.
Well, Bill, I just wondered that. I've been wondering that since the election.
Sure. There's no doubt there was irregularities going on, and there's no doubt that he has to do what he's got going on, if only to try to save the process. Because otherwise, if we don't have confidence in the electoral process, everything else a politician says is just going to be a lie from this point on. There's going to be no confidence.
Yes, sir.
There's going to be no loyalty. And these guys are very much going to become, this is just going to become a popularity contest. And with who can manipulate the most things. So we'll see. And, you know, it's silly for us to sit back and say, wow, I never knew this occurred. Because, of course, it occurred. We've been involved in cyber warfare for decades. And
that's
anything,
correct.
That's the problem with government. Because if they develop something to ostensibly go after bad players throughout the world, that all is going to be based on who's in power at that particular time. Me and you, in the Trump administration, we'd be looked at as patriots. In a Biden or Obama or Harris administration, we'd be looked at as malcontents. So we get reclassified just in the blink of a day from being a great American to being an enemy of the state.
Yes, sir. Well, Bill, thank you for taking my call. And
certainly.
You have
I'm sorry
a
you had to wait.
Day, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Let me just put this out there just because I don't know if this gets put out there or not. Because of COVID, right, I have to do the show remote, which means I'm somewhere off of Highway 14, and Chris, my ghost rider, he's in the studio. So when I get a call, he'll try to shoot me a message to let me know that's happening. And when I'm in here, it's sort of like being a mad scientist when I'm in my studio, because I'm, you know, arms waving and everything. I'm surprised you don't hear me hitting the mic and all this other stuff. So if it seems like I'm slow to respond, that's what's going on. The show goes on despite COVID. We have found a way. This is the beauty of talk radio, the internal drama of what makes it tick. But it's, you know, as far as Louis's question, I don't really know the details of that, because there's what the Constitution says, and then there's what the Democrats and everybody else below them says. Because right now, when I look at things that are run by conservatives, I can only tell you three things right now. The presidency, the Senate, and talk radio. That's it.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.